Hello, and welcome to 15 Minutes with Charlie. I'm your host, Charlie Meacham. I want to help you communicate more effectively, and I believe the use of anecdotes can get you there. Explore this with me as I share anecdotes from my book, Total Anecdotal, and ask guests to react in relation to their own experiences and careers. Mike McCarley is a young and very successful American broadcasting executive and the president of golf for the NBC Sports Group. He is a protege of former NBC Sports and Olympic legend Dick Ebersol, and is incredibly well connected in the golf world and in the sports world in general. Mike and I have become good friends, and I learn a lot from him about what's going on in the current sports world. Under his leadership, the Golf Channel has grown and prospered. I know you will enjoy my visit with Mike.
First one's under the heading of arrogance.
Okay.
Not because it's you, just because that's where it is in the book. And it goes like this. One night at sea, a captain saw what looked like the light of another ship heading toward him. He had his signalman blink to the other ship and said, "Change your course 10 degrees south." Well, the reply came back, "Change your course 10 degrees north." Well, the captain immediately answered and said, "I'm a captain. Change your course south." The reply came back, "Well, I'm a seaman. Change your course north." This, of course, infuriated the captain, so he signaled back, "Damn it, I say change your course south. I'm on a battleship." To which the reply came back, "I say change your course north. I'm in a lighthouse." So I'd like your thoughts on that, Mike.
Yeah, but this one I love because I think, you know, it's really important for people to be able to communicate well and to have a passion for what they do. And with that comes a certain confidence. But I think there's a very fine line between confidence and what you're talking about here with this anecdote of arrogance. And I just thought it was a great way to exemplify someone who, and we all know people like this who are never in doubt, but a lot of times they're wrong. And that's exactly what's going on right here between the battleship and the lighthouse.
Very good. It is something to remind ourselves that there are lighthouses all around us. We just have to be able to recognize them and not try to overpower them.
That's right.
The second anecdote that I want to get your reaction to is under the category of brevity in the book. And it's one of probably 8 million great Winston Churchill quotes, in which he said this about an overly long government report. He said, quote, "By its very length, it defends itself against the risk of being read," end quote. And I love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it, you know, it's so important in today's age to be able to communicate effectively and get your point across quickly. And we all know we're all distracted and no one has enough time to do anything. So I just, you know, it's something that I try to teach to young employees here. You know, everybody should have an elevator pitch, which, you know, we all know is if you're in an elevator with someone in between floors, can you get your point across in the amount of time that you have there? It might be 2 minutes, it might be 10 seconds, but you should be able to do it. So I think it's a great lesson to learn, and that, you know, you could quote Churchill forever and have a lot of great lessons for folks. And you've got several good Churchill anecdotes in the book. But I just think, you know, it's really important to have a vision, but the vision is only so good if you can articulate it effectively. And a big part of communicating effectively is to be able to get your point across in the amount of time that you have allotted. And you never really know how much time that is, so you have to be brief.
I've always said, obviously tongue-in-cheek, but that at least 80% of all communications going on anywhere in the world at a given time, written or spoken, are too long. You can almost be sure of it. So it is something we got to constantly remind ourselves. The next anecdote that I'd like your reaction to is under the category in the book of dealing with adversity. And it says, when dealing with difficult situations, it's critical that you not do things that make the situation even worse than it is. As someone once put it, if you find yourself in a hole, first thing to do is to stop digging.
That's right. Like, I tell you, this one is another one that when I speak to young up and coming executives and employees, you know, high potential employees, not just within our golf business, but across NBC Universal, I sponsor a group from, you know, all the different businesses that we have. And I have a, when I was probably early 30s, I had royally screwed something up with a very important partner. And I walked into my boss's office, and I didn't say I screwed up, but I walked in and he said, what's going on? And I used a different word that was more descriptive than I screwed up. And he stopped me and he said, well, did you tell our partners that? And I said, yeah, I did. I called him immediately. And I told him what happened. He goes, well, did you say that? Did you say I screwed up? And I said, yeah. He goes, because pretty much after you say that, there's really no other thing they can do except help you try to solve the problem.
Right.
So, you know, I try to teach this lesson that if there's something that gets messed up, and we all make mistakes, if you raise your hand and let people know that you made a mistake, there's virtually you know, any number of things, I think more than not, that you can probably resolve or at least get them to a better place if you can get to them quickly. I just think it's a great lesson to teach that, you know, we're not all batting a thousand on everything. So if you mess something up, let people know and you can usually fix it. And people appreciate honesty, as you well know.
I'll add to your storehouse of information on that subject with a personal example. When I was a young lawyer, I was working for this gentleman who was then about the age I am now. And I messed up something.
Right in his prime, right, Charlie?
Yeah,
right
in his 80s. And I messed up something. So I went into his office and I confessed, told him what I'd done, and then waited to get chewed out. Instead, he pushed back in his chair and he said, Charles, his name was Charles, so he liked to be called Charles. He said, Charles, I appreciate your telling me. He said that at my age, there isn't anything that hasn't happened to me at least three times. And I think of that often because it's true with me.
Yeah.
As you get older, you'll get experience and it's easier to deal with. Okay,
right.
The next one is, again, a quote, this time not from Winston Churchill, but from someone equally well-spoken, Yogi Berra.
Yeah.
And here's what Yogi said under the category of forecasting the future. He said, consider this quote, if you don't know where you're going, you're liable to end up somewhere else. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it. I mean, it says it all. If you're running a business or if you have an idea, you have to have a vision for where you're going, right? If you're a leader or you expect people to follow you, you have to have a vision. You have to be able to tell people where you're going. So I think this relates really well to the Churchill quote on brevity. Right. Have a vision, be able to articulate in a meaningful way. You want to be able to be passionate and optimistic about it. This gets me to a story about, our friend Arnold Palmer, who when he was in the early days of Golf Channel and what the original vision of Golf Channel was, I remember sitting with him, when he was in his mid 80s. And talking to him about some of the upcoming deals that we had for adding new programming. It was specifically about college golf. And, you know, he had a great career at Wake Forest and a great story there, and built friendships forever, and great legacy for Wake Forest golf and the university with him there. But I told him about it. I thought it was an underappreciated part of the game, and probably because the media had undercovered college golf throughout the years. And I said, and we, as the 24-hour network dedicated to golf, probably are the most to blame. And then I kind of took him through our plans of what we were planning on doing. And he said, you know what? I have a vision for what the channel was going to be in the early 90s. And I think everything that you're saying and what you're talking about is more in line with that original vision, because it should be all parts of golf, all parts of the game. Golf is a not just professional golf, but it's a lifestyle that people play for a lifetime. I mean, you know the story. Deacon Palmer put the club in Arnold's hands when he was 3 years old, and Arnold, you know, even several months before he passed away, I remember talking to him, and he's telling me he's out hitting balls and trying to get his swing back. So from 3 to 87, he played the game. And that was part of the original vision that he and Joe Gibbs had for what Golf Channel could be. So I think what Yogi Berra is saying, you know, no one can say it better than Yogi Berra, whether he means to say it or not. He always says it in a great way. If you don't know where you're going, if you don't know what your vision is, you're gonna end up somewhere else. And a lot of times, that's where other people want to take you, not where you want to go yourself. So it's a great line. It's a good little cautionary tale too.
Well, you know, along that line, Mike, one of the things I learned early on as an executive is, if I'm a CEO, I'm going to define the agenda. If I let others define the agenda, more often than not, the last item on the agenda will not be something that I'm wild about. And in case of certain of our advisors over the years, that bottom line has been making a deal that benefited them, not necessarily the company. So right. I think a vision is critical. And you and I were both blessed to share time with Arnold and understand he benefited from, I think, probably an unparalleled love of the game. A lot of people have loved the game. I doubt if anyone has loved it more, and which was one of the reasons that he never gave up. And one of the reasons I think why he didn't worry as much about scoring in those later years, he just wanted to play. He wanted to be right out there and be part of it.
Right.
Okay. Next one comes under the category of hard work in the book. And this is a fun little story, I think. A crow was sitting in a tree doing nothing all day. A rabbit came along and said, "Can I also sit like you and do nothing all day long?" The crow said, "Sure, why not?" So the rabbit sat on the ground, the crow rested, a fox jumped on the rabbit and ate it. Moral of the story, to be sitting and doing nothing, you must be sitting very high up. Now there's another companion anecdote, both involving birds in trees. And this one says, a turkey was chatting with a bull. "I'd love to be able to get to the top of that tree," said the turkey. "I haven't got the energy." "Well, why don't you nibble on my droppings?" said the bull. "They're packed with nutrients." So the turkey pecked at a lump of dung and found it gave him enough strength to reach the lowest level of the tree. And the next day, he ate some more and got a little higher up. Finally, on the fourth day, he was proudly perched at the top of the tree. Soon, he was an easy target for a farmer who shot him out of the tree. The moral, of course, is bullshit might get you to the top, but it won't keep you there. Thoughts on that one?
I think that is one of my more favorite stories, because it's so true. And we all know people who can talk a very good game, and maybe they don't have what it takes to back it up. And a lot of times that gets found out quickly. Sometimes it takes them a while. Maybe they get to the top of the tree.
Yeah.
But the point, I think, is from a that anyone can take away from this is that nothing beats hard work. You can have a great idea, but that's 10 or 20% of the process. You got to roll up your sleeves and get it done.
Right.
And that's the 90, 80, 90% of what makes a great idea into actually a successful venture. And I don't think that is something that people hear enough, is that hard work is what really matters, and there is really no substitute for good, long, hard, smart work. And at the end of that comes success.
I could not agree more. And as you know, there's a section in the book on hard work. I've literally never known a truly successful person who didn't work hard. And some appear to do it more easily than others, but underneath they're still grinding and working hard. And that's certainly true in golf. Some people come by it more easily, but no great player ever stayed off the range, I don't believe.
Yeah, that's true.
Final anecdote, Mike, is one of my real favorites. It's the story of the president of the company that manufactured dog food. He was addressing the annual sales meeting of his company. And by the way, this comes under the heading in the book of marketing, as it surely belongs. He was not very happy. Sales were lousy, and he's giving the sales group a stern lecture. He said, "I simply don't understand it. We have the finest product in the business. Our packaging and marketing are second to none, and yet sales are terrible. You guys must not be doing your job. Just tell me what's wrong." Well, there were several seconds of silence until one guy in the back of the room raised his hand. The president said, "Okay, so you think you know what's wrong? Then tell me." The fella, in a somewhat frightened voice, said, "Boss, the problem is the dogs don't like it." I love that story, and I love your reaction.
So when I told you about the flight I was on from Orlando to New York, and I read it, I used that anecdote probably, I think it was the next day, in a sales meeting that they had asked me to come to and speak. And I think what it ultimately gets down to is the product is everything.
Right.
And if the product's not great, and if your audience, your customer, your consumer doesn't like the product, then they're not going to buy it.
That's right.
They're not going to spend the time with it. And I've been fortunate enough to, have at this point in my career, produce and promote and market some of the biggest events in sports. And ultimately, we get a scorecard every day in the ratings.
Sure.
Your background in television and media tells you the exact same thing. The audience lets you know if they liked it or not. The next morning, you know.
That's right.
And in the case of something like the Olympics or Sunday Night Football, you can always look at the score or how many medals were won. Or a golf tournament, how compelling the characters on the leaderboard were or how close it was. There's always something you can tell and you can build from, but the dogs have to like the dog food, right? That there's no better way to say it, because I think people in this day and age, especially with social media, you can sell anything.
Right.
Well, if the product isn't great, you're not going to be able to sell it for very long, because people will find out and they just won't like it.
Well, I think, to compliment you, I think the Golf Channel is simply getting better every day, every week, every month, every year. And that's that's also an important point. However good you may think you are, you always got to keep pushing to get better. And interestingly enough, you get to 100% and then you step back and you say, I can still do a little better. So you've done that brilliantly, and I know you'll continue to. And thank you so much, Mike, for taking your time. I'm hopeful that other people will enjoy the book and use it. That's why I did it.
I think they will. And Charlie, I'll tell you this, that you had a passage in here about passion, that you quoted P.T. Barnum
Yeah.
Saying if I shoot at the sun, I may hit a star.
Right.
And I think a lot of us try to live our life that way. But in the same passage, you also talked about Winston Churchill had a line that a pessimist sees the difficulty in every opportunity and an optimist sees the opportunity in every difficulty. And I think you just have this wonderful optimistic view of life and the world. And what you have put in these pages is an absolute gift. So I really appreciate you for putting this together. You have a lifetime of lessons and learnings that you were generous enough and gracious enough to put into words for other people to be able to use and live by for quite some time.
Thank you for joining me for today's conversation. If you'd like to listen to more episodes, please visit Charlie Meacham, MECHEM.com, or search for 15 Minutes with Charlie in your podcasting app. If you're enjoying the show, you should check out my book, Total Anecdotal, a fun guide to help you become a better communicator. Learn more at charliemeacham.com/book.